Dr. Schock, before the end of the last hour, I had asked you a question about the Earth changes that we seem to be having more of recently. I'm not even at this point even referring to weather, because I think weather is changing, whether climate is changing or not. I guess you can get all kinds of arguments on that, but it just certainly seems as though storms are more fierce and winds are stronger and the blizzards are a little bit worse and the droughts are a little bit worse. But what about the earthquakes and the volcanoes and that type of thing? Do you think we're going into a different Earth cycle where we may be confronting the formidability of nature more than we have been?
It's real. To be honest, it's really hard to know. I mean, I think that's a distinct possibility. I think another possibility is that we are more perceptive of it. Sort of a general rule of thumb in geology, historical geology, is that as things are more recent and closer to you in time,
yeah,
you have more definition of it. You have more perception of the nuances. So what I'm referring to is that I think we're monitoring such things much more accurately now, much more precisely. And with our high technological society, very slight changes can have much greater ramifications.
Well,
so
I
personally fear, if I could use that term, that it's a combination that we're more sensitive, we've got more monitoring of such things, but there, in fact there may be more changes in an absolute sense also. One thing that we've learned, at least I believe we've learned, is that the Earth system is very, very interconnected between geological changes on the surface of the Earth, climatic changes, astronomical changes in the skies. I mean, all of these systems interrelate to each other, so change in one, like climate, is not incompatible with changes on and within the surface of the Earth. The magnetosphere and the natural magnetism of the Earth, we know fluctuates with time. And when I say no fluctuates with time, within years and decades, and even less than that, and can have major ramifications.
What would happen if that changed? What would happen?
So, for instance, you can have increased amounts of cosmic radiation coming into the system as you change the magnetosphere, and that can then have ramifications in the ecosphere in, among biological organisms. So it can have a cascading or sort of a domino effect. What can sometimes be very small changes can have a triggering effect. It's can be very scary, I think.
We might not need our very own nuclear war to wipe ourselves out, would we?
No. In fact, this is one scary thing. I personally believe that all the evidence indicates in the last couple of hundred years, especially the last 50 years, things like human-induced global climate change are real. I'm quite aware as a geologist that Earth, independent of humans, has undergone major changes, including major changes in climate, and will continue to do so. But I don't think we can just ignore human effects.
Well, there's certainly, we have, as they say, left our footprint on the planet.
We certainly have. And so we are leaving our footprint and having an effect on global systems.
Mm-hmm.
Plus, every day, every year, we are more at the mercy, should we say, of such things. Especially if you think about, for instance, we're so dependent upon communication. Satellites, for instance, and they are so vulnerable to, as some people would say, the whims of nature.
Yeah. It's amazing. I know here when we have, or anywhere, if you have some type of, whether it's an earthquake or a major fire or something, or remember the New York blackout when the power goes out, I mean, literally our civilization would roll to a stop batteries only last so long.
Exactly. And we are so out of touch with nature. I got to mention this. The Milky Way.
Yeah.
Most people know what the Milky Way is. many people have never actually seen the Milky Way. Because we have so much, we're indoor creatures. Plus, if you go outside in most cities, there's so much light pollution, you really can't see it.
Yeah.
So there have been reported cases, for instance, in L.A., where there was a major power outage. Everything went dark. All of a sudden, people see the Milky Way. And in some cases, it's reported they were really scared of it. They thought it was some kind of, like, evil cloud or radiation or who knows what.
Well, you know, my experience...
Because we're so out of touch with nature.
That's true. I was shocked. I took a trip to Australia a number of years ago, and I was on a train trip across what's called the Nullarbor Plain from Perth back. And it's a stretch of desert where there, Nullarbor means no trees, and there are no trees for a couple hundred miles at the very least. And I woke up in the middle of the night on the train and just peeked out the window, you know, and just wanted to see if I could see anything. And I literally caught my breath because I never saw a sky like that. It was almost solid white.
Exactly.
As though someone had taken a paintbrush and just slapped paint on the black sky. And I suddenly realized that because I was so far out in the middle of nowhere, there was no light from the ground reflecting. And I was seeing the sky as it is, and I had never seen it before, and I simply, it took my breath away. I've never seen anything like that before or since.
Exactly, exactly, exactly. So take that image or take that thought and then think back thousands of years. I mean, they in one sense we see the same sky they saw thousands of years ago, but in another sense we don't at all. We don't at all. Plus,
that's a good point. I never thought of it that way. They saw a lot more simply because they didn't have electricity.
Absolutely. They saw a lot more. And plus, as I outline in the book, I mean, there were things going on in the sky at certain periods. And even if those things were going on now or when they happen, because I think they will return in the not-too-distant future, we're not going to see them the same way they saw them, just because of the factors we're talking about.
Wow. I've got lots more questions, but we also have a lot of callers, so let's get the callers in, too. We have someone on the east of the Rockies line. Caller, what is your name, and where are you calling from?
My name is Sino. I'm calling from Virginia Beach, Virginia.
Hi. Go ahead, please.
Well, I guess I just want to run this by as one of my theories. You know, I mean, what if the scientists, the archaeologists and whatnot, what if we've got it all wrong? Okay, I mean, getting back to, like, the Garden of Eden thing, ancient Egypt, so on and so forth. Basically, where I'm coming from is, what if it all started here in the New World, the North American, the South American continent? I mean, if you think about this, this could explain the similarities between and why... It would appear at times that the Mayan and Aztec civilizations, as well as the Toltecs, were pretty much more advanced in certain things.
Doctor?
Yeah, I actually, you know, my evidence does not suggest that it all began in the Americas. On the other hand, I wouldn't disagree entirely that I think some things may have originated in the Americas and were, you know, migrated or diffused the other way around. And this is a good opportunity I want to take to state that I think there was a diffusion across both oceans into the Americas, but I don't think it was necessarily one way. And I think there are aspects of astronomy, aspects of mathematics, calendar systems, for instance, that there probably is evidence that it diffused the other way. Plus, tying in with what the caller was just saying, as we pointed out earlier, as far as we can determine, the oldest pyramids known may actually be from Peru.
Really?
Americas. Yeah. So, and again, in my opinion, that's because that was a branch out from Sundaland even earlier. But once they were in Peru, there probably was influence elsewhere in the world. So, I don't totally agree that everything absolutely originated in America. But I also think that there were things that originated in America and spread out the other way.
Would In terms of age, where does, you said the Sphinx, which is what we started talking about
right.
earlier, is that older or younger than those Peruvian
pyramids?
No, that's
pyramids? Older. The Sphinx is older.
The Sphinx is older.
But the Peruvian pyramids are older than the Egyptian pyramids, at least the classic Egyptian pyramids.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah.
Is the Sphinx the oldest man-made structure on the planet?
Well, no, not the oldest man-made structure, but...
What is? Do you know?
No, well, the term is man-made. I mean, there are a lot of man-made things that are very small. Now, as far as big, monumental architectural structures, it certainly is in the running for being the oldest one. It probably is.
Okay. That's a good point. I mean, there were smaller things,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, there are lots of smaller things that are older.
All right, let's go to the West of the Rockies line. Caller, good morning. What's your name and where are you?
My name's Bob, and I'm from Monterey, California.
Hi, Bob. Go ahead.
Morning, Barbara.
Good morning.
Doctor, the pyramids that are in Giza, those are similar, I've read, to Orion, the Belt of Orion. What are your thoughts on that?
Oh, absolutely. I agree with that. That is really the work of my friend and colleague, Robert Bouval, who has found correlations between specifically the three major pyramids of Giza and Orion's Belt. But the correlations go way beyond just those three pyramids. And I don't dismiss that. In fact, I think he's absolutely correct that there is a correlation with Orion, and Orion has very powerful mythological and symbolic meanings. It was associated by the ancient Egyptians with Osiris and the Pharaoh, and again, I think ties in with the general concept of sky religion that we've been talking about.
Yeah.
Plus, Orion is recognized, sometimes it's referred to as asterism, sort of a very recognizable type of constellation, and it's recognized around the world, and I don't think that's trivial. Being a man, usually being some kind of hunter, associated with the Pleiades, also, it seems to be one of these constellations or one of these symbolic forms that is very, very ancient, and we see that in Giza, but we see that elsewhere. A fellow I know, Tom Brophy, has done some very meticulous work on Napta Playa, on the calendar circles we were talking about.
Yes.
And he has recognized Orion there, made a very strong case that they recognized Orion 5,000, 6,000, 7,000 B.C. So I think this is another theme that we're seeing throughout a lot of pyramids and ancient cultures.
And just boggles my mind when I think about this. Let's go to the first time caller line. Caller, where are you? Where are you calling from? What's your name?
My name's Clay. I'm calling from San Jose.
Hi there. Go ahead.
I guess two quick questions. First off, great show.
Thank you.
The doctor's very down to earth.
Yes.
What do you think about Clive Ross's theory regarding the three big pyramids on Giza and their relationship to the angular relationships of the four inner planets? And the other thing is John Neal, his ancient metrology theory, the global metrology theory that he has. And I can take that off the air if you want.
Okay, thank you. Doctor?
Yeah, I think that there's clear... let me start with the... I'll mention both. I mean, I think there's clear astronomical correlations on the Giza Plateau, as we were talking about with Orion, as far as planetary. And I just mentioned him, Tom Brophy is doing a very, very thorough study of alignments on the Giza Plateau.
Mm-hmm.
And so I want to see what he comes up with. But there's clearly a lot there. I mean, the traditional point of view, should we say, is that things were just put there randomly, or another theory which I've looked at very carefully as a geologist, is that the pyramids were placed on the Giza Plateau for basically structural reasons. They were put in the spots they were put because that's where the best bedrock was. In fact, that doesn't hold up at all.
Oh, it doesn't?
No, it really doesn't.
That.
I mean, yes, the bedrock had to be stable enough for them to be placed, but there were other arrangements that they could have taken. So, I mean, that says to me that, they were placed where they were placed for very clear, specific reasons. You don't build a structure like that and just place it randomly.
But, I mean, if they were aligning it with Orion in some way, what was the purpose of it? I mean, was it something in terms of looking at the sky, or was it lined in with their religion, or was it just the mystery of the power of nature, or,
well,
or
no,
will
I
we
think,
ever
I
know?
I think it was both looking at the sky, recording things in the sky, predictive value to a certain extent. In fact, your last caller, I think, was alluding to that. I hate using the term because we always give things a wrong connotation when we try to compare them to modern.
Yeah.
But basically, astronomical observations. I think those astronomical observations and predictions were part of the Giza Plateau situation. I mean, for instance, and some of my colleagues have done more work than I on this aspect, if you take the pyramids and when they were unfinished structures, the alignments of the shafts and galleries would have been very useful for predicting and observing the skies. So there's that aspect. As far as sort of a universal system of units around the world, which has been suggested, I think that has to be looked at very closely. I don't.
What is that?
Basically, that there are certain units of length that we find around the world. In particular, certain units of area, certain units of time, that are common to civilizations globally. Standard devices. I mean, we have that now in modern terms in the metric system.
Yeah.
But we know exactly where that came from, you know, late 18th century France. But in fact, standards of units of measurement that go back to ancient times, it's not just arbitrary. It's not a situation where every civilization has its own arbitrary units.
They're the similar and or they're the same.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that ties right in with the concept of migration and contact and connection and ideas, thoughts, systems, both technology, culture, religion, diffusing throughout the world in ancient times, that there were these connections.
Wow, that's amazing. Let's see if we can get another call in on the wild card line. Caller, what's your name? Where are you?
This is Will from Madison, Wisconsin. Hi, and hello, Dr. Schock.
Hello.
In another book, Our Secret Origins, History Exposed, another author raises the hypothesis that it was actually Finno-Ugric peoples that sailed about the world and built some of the pyramids based on both base, root of words, and also genetic markers. And it was
okay, hold your thought there. I hear the music. We're at the bottom. I'll take you as soon as we come back. Try to sum it up in a nice brief question for us, Will, and Dr. Schock will answer it right here on Coast to Coast AM. I'm Barbara Simpson.